Hi, Maria.
Hi, Femka. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Good. I was just trying to find a link. I logged on to the ACMC Revisited, but anyway, I
Okay. Yeah, that one was earlier today.
Yeah, I'm finding it hard to get to both of them in the same day.
Yeah, I can understand that.
But how are you?
Yeah, doing well.
That's good.
A new babysitter again.
Yeah, so inside the home.
Yeah, and that actually works out just fine. She like
Yeah.
takes him to the Discovery Museum, and
Yeah.
like she's gonna take him swimming, and she likes it. He likes her. Like I just had 15 minutes between this meeting and my previous meeting, and he just ignored me. And I'm like, oh my God, he ignored me. He doesn't love me anymore.
Oh, that's a good sign. A difficult sign to digest,
Oh.
but not yeah, but nonetheless a good sign.
Yes, exactly.
Oh. It's challenging, you know. Yeah. Does hubby help you out with looking for childcare? Like, is it?
No, I do that myself.
Yeah, it's a big responsibility, isn't it? Like, I think it's hard for men to understand. Like, you know, like I, you know, I still say to my husband, like, whatever you have on, whether it's work meeting or you've got to travel for work or like, you just go, right, Marie, I've got to go, and that's it.
No.
But you know, it's so true, isn't it, Tanya?
Yes, hello.
But then when like, you know, you say, like, you know, I've got something to do, like, you know, when we do like ACMC trainings, oh my God, it's like the logistical nightmare of trying to, you know, create everything and get everything sorted is like, you know, it's intensive.
I know. Like my husband, like he watches Finn one morning a week. Because it's expensive to have like a nanny in your house. So I'm like, you know, and then on like when he has that, he's like, oh my God, I have so much to do. I have like less than half a week in terms of time to do to run my business. And yeah, that's just the way that it goes. I don't think he could, I think he would be really stressed if I said, here, you do it.
But it's challenging. And then if they're sick, you know, like you're happy, he'll go to work regardless. It's kind of then it's up to you to sort something out, or you miss out on your work, or you have to reschedule your meeting, or
Or if you are sick. Yes.
How was your birthday, Tanya?
It was great. It was so
It
beautiful. Yeah. In
was
fact, I had a call with Femke yesterday, and I wanted to show you my beautiful flowers, Femke. My house is just like a florist at the shop at the
Oh, yeah,
moment.
nice.
I've been so spoiled. And my eldest daughter, she's been going, Mom, I've got a hay fever from all these flowers.
Oh, that's so
So,
nice.
yeah. Yeah, the house smelled like lilies yesterday. The lilies were all closed and then they've just all blossomed open. So yes, very beautiful.
Oh, beautiful. Nice.
Yeah, who would have thought 2050 could be such a fun
Look, I'm not
age?
sure whether I believe you, Tanya, that you're 50. I'm just not sure. I just need to see your birth certificate.
Yes, I totally agree on that one.
It's so funny because I don't have my birth year correct on Facebook. And a couple of years ago, one of my friends said, Tanya, your thing on Facebook's wrong. It says you're 50. And I was like, yeah, so what? Yeah, anyway, it made me laugh. So I'm 57 on Facebook
Oh,
now, I think. So yeah, I really am doing well for my age. Yeah, it's all in your mind, I think. It's been fascinating though to like observe all the beliefs that you have around what that means. Like I found myself seeing little things and remembering being a little kid and meeting people who were 50 and thinking, oh, they're really old, you know. And of course, then you're there on the other side going, I'm not old, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think mentally, like, we don't, like, I don't know. I don't feel much different than when I was 20.
Yeah.
A little wiser, of course, but.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating the way it all works.
Yeah.
And I've got such a mix of friends who are all, you know, either already in their 50s or nowhere near. And, yeah, we were having a good chat about it over lunch, actually, and what a crazy thing it is, this idea. In fact, Hannah's just read a book for school called The Giver. They made it into a movie a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And after they turn 12, they don't have age. They don't measure age. Mm-hmm. But then you do get to a point where you go off to the old people's home. And I said to Hannah, how would that be if you just didn't have an age?
Mm. In many tribes, they don't, do they? They don't, you know, they don't have birth certificates. They don't have an accurate, date of record of each person's birth date.
Yeah, it's not important.
No.
We love counting.
Maybe they get older too.
What do you mean?
Like if you don't know your age, like you don't have, really have a timeline maybe, or yet your timeline is longer.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely tunes your mind to focus in a different way.
Mm.
It's, yeah, and we are real counters, aren't we, in the West modern
world?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's all the meanings we give to it, isn't it, though?
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. How are you? How's that beautiful puppy going?
Oh, she's a handful. Like, seriously, we are literally taking turns, sleeping on the lounge with her, like, next to us. Just bought a baby gate so then at least we can have our bedroom door open without her coming in.
Good idea. Yeah.
Maybe put the crate kind of nearby. So it's not, we don't have the door locked. We have a crate door sort of, you know, open. We're trying to get her, you know, just happy to be in there. And, but we had a trainer come last week and she was really good. Like so much psychology, you know, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Years gone by, you know, people just had dogs, left them outside and that was it, you know. But to kind of, you know, have a really good relationship and have your, you know, dog well trained in terms of, you know, just not destroying things and being well socialized. And there's a lot of psychology behind it. It's like it's a whole field.
It is. It's a whole language, a whole cultural thing.
And it's quite challenging too.
Yeah, it can be kind of. You have to put, it's like having children, really. You have to put a lot of time in.
Yeah. Like now, you know, I used to carry nappies and wipes and now I carry doggy bags and I've got it in my handbag.
And treats.
Quite funny. Yeah, and treats. I've just literally.
Like, good dog.
Yeah,
rewarding them when they do something good.
I know, and then the trainer was saying like it, you know, because like it's just even in just the understanding, especially when they're a puppy. It's different, I think, when they're a little bit older already, and when you know you still want to train them. But when they're a puppy and they're in that socialization stage, just to understand, like you know, not to reinforce negative experiences. Like if they, you know, hear a really loud noise. And they like run away, get scared, or if it's a dog barking and not to say, it's okay, like, you know, and calm them. It's like, basically ignore it because you're reinforcing the negative, experience. Whereas the natural instinct for me and the kids and Rick and I has been, you know, my instinct until this, you know, is actually the vet who said it. Was to, comfort her. It's okay. Like, and I thought that would be a good thing to comfort her. But in actual fact, it's not. So it's very interesting.
It is interesting. It's quite similar to kids in a way.
Absolute parallels. Absolutely.
So many parallels. We had a, it wasn't funny at the time, but it's funny now looking back. We had a funny situation with Holly because Kel never grew up with dogs. So hasn't had any experience with them until now. And just didn't really, wasn't familiar with it and didn't kind of understand, I guess, as he does now, the whole process of training and how
she's making sense of being in this family and where her place is and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there was this week where every night when Kel went to bed, there would be a little chocolate on the pillow from Holly. Oh. Not my pillow. His pillow. She did it three times. And the reason it was on the bed is because our bed was on the floor. That dog's got it in me. Anyway, we similarly had a trainer come out and she said, okay, the dog's confused. You know, the dog's, something's happened and the dog's really confused. So yep. The whole psychoanalysis of Kel's relationship with the dog and everyone else's, and you know, it was really quite fascinating for me on the side, but not so fun for Kel.
Yeah.
It all very personally. Anyway, she hasn't done it since we got back.
Well, that's the thing. We're trying to also then, yeah, limit her movements in the house as well. So, yeah. Like, you know, close the door.
Yeah. Oh, and I think that is so critical, like to limit their movements and to not have them think they own the house.
Yeah.
Because we did not do that. Like, my husband is, he just loves dogs, but he's not consistent at all. So, like, he goes out the door because he walks the dogs in the mornings, and he'll sit them down, and then, like, he'll go outside and be like, all right, Lila, Riley, heel. And it just goes, like, heel. It goes louder and louder, but they're not listening.
Yeah.
Because they're so excited to go outside. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, it's interesting. The trainer said not to say no, like, to the dogs, like, save that for something really serious. But, I mean, look, I'm not sure I agree necessarily every single, you know, kind of philosophy and principle. But it's interesting. Like, maybe once I have a better understanding, I'll kind of come around. But you know, when she's, like, doing something, you know, like, if she's, like, nipping and biting the kids or something, you know, kind of, I'm like, no, like, I don't know. We'll see how it unfolds.
Like, we have this thing called the freedom leash, and that has actually worked really well on training our dog.
Okay. The one that goes over the nose?
No, it's like a leash that, like, you put it just around the neck.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually one that is, like, created by the dog father. And he's with it as well. And it's so it's not the dog whisperer, but the dog father. And he has created this, what is it called? A collar. And it simulates the pinch that the mom does in the neck. And basically what they have is, like, a really long leash, but it's really lightweight, so they don't feel it. Mm-hmm. And it gives you, like, a lot of control. When I had Lila, she's, I think, 4 or 5 now, I had that on her, and she, like, at 3 months, I could take a shower, and she would lay outside the shower without running away. Putting her in the down position, and because she would just, like, try to run away, but because you have the leash on, you can step on the leash easier. Mm. So that gives you a lot more control, because they're going to figure out that they can run away from you.
Yeah.
Mm. So that was really useful, and it comes with videos on how to use it. And
oh, wow, that's good.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to have a look at that.
We had one that went across the nose, and so when Holly would walk with it, she would walk very tentatively, so she wouldn't run off, and because the nose is similar, it's an area that they get disciplined by their mum.
Exactly.
So initially I was a bit worried that it was a bit mean, but I said, no, it's not hurting her. It's just that she's, like, it's putting her in a heightened state of paying attention. And he's going to, you know, be looking to you for cues. And she was pretty good after that.
Do you still have to use it?
No, we don't. In fact, when we got her back from the people who looked after her while we were away, she didn't come back with that leash, so we haven't had it since we got back. But you know, we were talking before about, you know, them training and learning and stuff. When Holly and you were saying about nipping that the kids' feet and stuff, Maria. When Holly first came home, she would nip Hannah a lot and basically treat Hannah like she was another puppy. And the trainer said, "Oh yeah, the puppy's figured out that she's the youngest in the pack, so she's vying for position with Holly." With Hannah. She figures that she can just get one up. It was really good for Hannah because she really had to learn the skills of being assertive, which was really hard for this cute puppy. And so even now she'll say, "Holly, no," and she's sort of on a really stern, you know, "I mean business voice," and they have a really cute relationship. Holly's looking at me like, "Why are you talking about me?"
I just noticed Francisco
has joined us.
He said, "I can't." Francisco? He said, "I can't. I can hear well, but microphone is limited."
Okay.
He's written in the chat.
Okay. Yeah, just saw that. Let's try. Hi, Francisco. No, not working. Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, there we go.
Hey.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm in a public place, so I have to be quiet.
Okay. Hello. Okay, no problem.
Great. So thank you.
Okay. So so let's switch gears. And today is going to be about energizing the well-formed outcome. And I wanted to explain a little bit about how I use the energizing the well-formed outcome in the quantum leap system and where that fits in. Because we basically say that it is through testing questions, through checking questions and asking clarity and exploration. I think that meta questions is a really important part of that as well. So like what I'd like to go over is to focus on like how does that fit into the quantum leap so that when you go over the template, it's more natural to get to where the change power is, because ultimately that's what energizing the well-formed outcome is all about. It is about finding out the change power, finding the where the change power is. So, but before, if you watch the video, do you have any questions or anything that you would like me to address in particular?
I've literally just watched it before the call. And I listened to it once and then I listened to it again and I was just taking notes. So I think I'm kind of just trying to slot it all into place. I think I'll have to listen to it. I've written some notes, but I'll probably have to listen to it another time. So probably good to go over it again and then I can ask some more questions.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah, I watched it a couple of times last night and it's bringing a lot of the stuff together. So it's, yeah. It's not as dialed in yet as I'd like, but yeah, getting there.
Okay. So let me go to, I think I have a little bit of a different way of explaining it now, but it comes down to the same thing. So just gonna draw these very familiar circles. So once we have all of the, like, or not once, but as we're gathering, like, the information of the present and desired state, then we obviously go through, like, a process of detection and analysis, and that's really something that, like in the MetaCoach system has not really been explained separately, but it's a big part of energizing the well-formed outcome, because once you do that, once you go through like the process of hey, I've got a present state and I've got a desired state and there's like a contrast analysis and I can make like that's not what I wanted. Like I've got like this list of like several like things that we like, so we can have like a all or nothing thinking. We can have like an external reference, and we've got confusing human being from human doing. So we're building this list, and like that might be also just the fact that we have certain like really toxic beliefs or limiting beliefs. So it might be that in this list is like a belief statement that is really problematic. But ultimately, that's what helps us get to where the change power is. Now, once we have this, we've got this list, then we're going to start to kind of do a comparison, or we're going to do like a prioritization. So if we changed in this situation, if we changed the all or nothing to in between thinking and help your client really see what that would be like to do the in-between thinking, would that allow you to go to your desired state? If the answer is yes, but then there might be some other things to still work on. If it is yes, then that can be like your top priority. And that's how you then get to your change power. So that is what we need to be working on today. Yes. And that really, like when we then drop into the how, we know, okay, this is priority number one, and that is going to change also the external reference, and so we don't have to work on that, but we still need to work on this as well. Then we're going to take a closer look at, okay, so let's say that we need to change the all or nothing thinking. Then we can get to that question, what do you need to do to get from all or nothing thinking to both and thinking? We ask questions, testing questions there. Have you done that before? Can you do that? Because even if it's like one tiny example where they have done that before, we can use that to start mapping that out. And that is like a further refinement, and in a way a further energizing of the system of getting the what that we need to work on. So my client may already know how to change or how to do both and thinking, but something is stopping them from doing that. Might be a reference experience, or it might be a belief that is operating behind that. So then it becomes about changing that belief. And that's one of the steps that my client needs to do in order to change from all or nothing to thinking to both and thinking, so that they can make that shift from where they are to where they want to be. That's how you start to get closer to what is it that we need to work with. So in detection and analysis, you basically figure out what is the contrast between the two, and then you prioritize so that you know this is where the most change power is. And then once you figure that out, you're going to look at what do I need to help my client with so that they can do the rest themselves. So as an example, I once already had identified one of my beliefs. And so in the coaching, I didn't need to identify the beliefs. And I also didn't need help with embodying the new belief. What I needed help with was finding the new beliefs, because I like just didn't have clarity on that. So that's what you figure out in the how. Like, do you know how to embody a new belief? Yes, I can do that myself. Do you know how to say no to the old belief? Yes, I've already done that. So those are all testing questions. Then the question is like, okay, what is it then that I need to help you with? Well, I need some new beliefs, but I can't seem to figure that out. So this is how you start to kind of like refine more and more on how you're going to help, how you're going to help your client get there. So there might be several steps, but in those steps, there might be only two or three things that you, that your client needs your help with. And so that's the next part of really getting clear on this is what we need to work on in the coaching session. And so for me, that's really how you energize the well-formed outcome, like, and determining what to work on. Does that make sense? Any questions about that? Let's see, Maria, you have your hand up.
Yes, I so at the beginning, we've got the testing, the clarity, the checking, the exploration, meta questions. So initially, so the first question is the what, and then after we ask the what is it that the client wants, it's we're making sure we're asking clarity questions to kind of have a clearer understanding. Like you said, if in your video you were saying if they were stuck or self-conscious. So is that kind of like what you're showing us now? I sense it's like a bit of a jump forward. So I want to just step back a little bit and understand. What is it the first thing you say?
What is the first thing I say in terms of working with my client?
Yeah, yeah. If you're doing a one-off session, is it the first question is what is it you want, and then with what they give you, you're asking clarity questions. Is that kind of in your mind the process?
Yeah, and the thing is with clarity questions, for me, I focus more on strategy process.
Right.
So what I want to know, what is the context, and in that context, what is the trigger with relation to maybe an overall outcome? So let's say I have already set that up with my client, an entire program, and we're now just doing like one session inside of that, inside of the program. Mm-hmm. So then maybe we have already identified all of this, which lot of the time I already have identified that in the beginning.
Okay. So if we hadn't, so with the one of the previous templates that you've given us, so is that kind of essentially where you would start? If you're starting from zero, mm-hmm. you would be firstly trying to identify the present state, the trigger, the beliefs, any reference experience. So just unpacking the present state.
Yeah. And the desired state. So most people actually are away from motivated when they come to you for coaching. Mm-hmm. And so very often that's where you start. But if someone's really towards motivated, you can start there. But you always need the present state strategy process as well to be able to do a contrast analysis. Mm-hmm. So getting all of the details of the system, all of the elements, helps you with doing detection and analysis. And it's not like necessarily a linear process.
Yeah.
You need to have at least several layers before you start identifying a pattern or a meta program. Because what I notice is that sometimes after just one statement, oh, that's external reference. So that's what we need to be working on.
Yeah.
And your client might go, oh yeah, that's what we need to be working on. Because you haven't explored what is higher up. So giving that a little bit of time so that you start seeing a pattern and maybe see how external reference leads into not the belief of I'm not good enough. And that's actually driving the external reference. So once you have all of that information, and that's where clarity questions come in. Because you ask clarity questions and also the clarity questions, VAK, meta model questions are all part of getting the strategy process in addition to the meta questions.
Okay. So part of the clarity questions is understanding the VAK as well.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So that's so clarity questions assist with uncovering the strategy process for the present state usually.
And then later and for the desired state.
Desired too. State.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's where like you're already starting to ask clarity questions and exploration questions in that first phase.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of start to look at, okay, now I'm starting to see a difference here. And what happens a lot is that once you have done like present state and do a little bit of detection and analysis, a lot of the time it's easier for your client to think up something completely out of the box for the desired state because they've already stepped out of this. If you haven't helped them step out of this and kind of see the structures, for a lot of people, it's really difficult to then come up with something that is not based on just the opposite of this. If that makes sense. So having that like that process of like getting with clarity and exploration questions and meta questions, getting the strategy processes for both and doing detection and analysis. That's also like, this is also like where you're going to check. So what I see is this, would that be correct? So you're asking testing questions, checking your understanding. and then you're basically going to try things on to prioritize which one, where is the biggest impact. So if we change all or nothing, or if we change external to internal referencing, is that going to make the difference for you? Same thing with like, let's say it's we've done social panorama, we've kind of mapped out the semantic space, and in the social panorama, the person that we're working with has like a limiting use of semantic space. So they have placed someone, let's say they're in a relationship and they've placed their partner right in front of them and a lot bigger. And so, and they feel like, suffocating or stuck or I don't know. So then asking them, like, if you were to put this person in a different position, would that help? So you're asking a lot of, in that process of prioritizing, you're asking a lot of testing questions. They're closed-ended. That helps you with refining what is the priority. Then once you've done that, you continue asking testing questions. Have you done this before? Can you do this? Because now you know exactly where the change power is, but you don't yet know what is going to make that shift for your client. So you need to break that down further so that you figure out that it's something that they can't do for themselves, that is in their power, that they need your help with. You can figure out the how by asking them, like, if they have tried it before, what worked, what didn't work, so that you can figure out what do they already know how to do for themselves and what is it that they need my help with. Because if you ask that question, have you done that before, and they say yes, and I'm so you know how to do it, yes, but in this situation I can't, like, you know, if it needs to be like a change in social panorama, like, I can't keep the person, I can move it, but it doesn't stay permanent in this situation. Okay, so that is what we then need to work on. So as you go through the phases, you get closer and closer to that thing that you need to work on so that you can lock down the outcome. Any questions about that?
I'm just, Femke, I think I'm kind of, I know it's not linear, but I'm kind of just imagining it in like a flow chart. And this is kind of like sort of what I'm kind of coming to is the understanding of. So the our strategy is to uncover our client's strategy process. And to do that, we're going to be using the clarity questions, exploration questions, and meta questions. Yes. And then that will help us uncover the present state and desired state.
Mm-hmm.
Once we have that, we can do an analysis.
Yes.
And look for any of those cognitive distortions, thinking styles. And then we can then give feedback, make acknowledgements. And once we get feedback, acknowledgements, and you know, might have to go through a loop, then ask testing questions. Mm-hmm. Is the final kind of thing, and then we might have to loop back depending on the test where the testing questions go. But is that kind of essentially the process?
Yes. Yeah, so here you ask the clarity, exploration, meta questions, the VAK, where, when, and with whom. So you're already at, you're also asking some meta model questions.
Mm-hmm. So then, so the VAK in the middle model is about clarity.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the kind of like the idea is that if you can see it like through your own eyes and try it on and replicate how they are doing it with what they're seeing, with what they're hearing, and how they're hearing it, etc., so that puts you into that state. That is when you have enough clarity about it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So then here with the detection and analysis is at first that is just a like feeding back the story of how they've created this and what they want instead. And then like, okay, this is what I notice. And so it really is just like sharing and giving feedback on what you see and what you observe and what you hear, and checking with your client is, do you see that as well? Would you agree with that? So that you can start to make a list and then prioritize that list in terms of like, okay, because sometimes if you change one thing, it changes three other things as well, and they become obsolete and you don't have to work on those. So that means that you have locked in closer on where the change power is. Once you've got that, like you could just continue with, so this is mostly testing questions. Then you continue with testing questions to figure out the how. And some of, you know, like now your client is informed enough to answer that question, what is it that you need to do to get from A to B? Or do you know how to change from all or nothing to both and thinking? And then that becomes like figuring out the how. And that's mostly testing questions, but it could also be exploration questions or getting clarity on if they say something that for you is not clear, then you can get clarity on that as well. To get really specific.
Okay, thank you.
Francisco or Tanya, do you have questions?
None from me at this stage. It all makes perfect sense, but it probably will. My questions will probably come up in the process.
Yeah, so like my idea is to do like a 25 minute for one of you to coach and do a 25 minute practice, and then we can discuss it afterwards and I will take notes while one person coaches. So my guess is that it'll be Maria and Tanya, since Francisco
like in a public place.
So Maria or Tanya, who would like to coach today?
I'm happy to coach.
Okay. Do you have something to be coached on, Maria? Or
I'll think of something. Thinking. Brain's working. I will think of something.
Got too much puppy love going on here.
And lack of sleep.
I'm sorry.
lack of sleep. Okay, let me think of something. Oh, okay. All right. Okay, got it.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to set the timer for 25 minutes. And so like the main thing is like first, Tanya, to focus on present and desired state and really ground that, get the strategy process. And then when you have time to do the detection and analysis, it's not like a linear process, but then go there and figure out the how as well.
Okay. All right, I'll do my best.
All right, time is yours.
Thank you. So, Maria, tell me, what is it that you would like to work on this morning or this evening for you?
Yeah. As you know, I'm coming to Oz in April for a couple of weeks, and I've been trying to organise get-togethers, and I messaged my younger sister, who's 2 years younger, and said, you know, this, like, you know, you're available on these dates, and I've just started planning, and she came back to me and she said, basically, is this all you can offer me, like, in terms of time? And so I just kind of, my sister, she holds on to, like, lots of things, so she came back. And yes, is this all you can offer me? I was hoping we could reconnect a bit more because we're not as close as we used to be. And I'm not sure how I'm going to handle it, whether I'm going to end up seeing her at all. And so it's probably playing on my mind a little bit.
Okay. So when you say it's playing on your mind, what is it that's playing on your mind?
Well, like at the heart of it, like, you know, she can often play the victim but she has a good heart as well. Whatever my actions end up being, I don't want to intentionally hurt her. Like, I always want her to know that I always want the best for her, I explicitly say that, but I want her to always remember that. I'm concerned about, you know, her expectations of when I come and what's going to happen, because it'll be quite stressful, I think, if I come and she, you know, wants to have it out with me.
Okay. So just so that I'm clear, because, you know, when we're coaching, it's a process of looking at what's going on for you, and I'm hearing that you're, you know, worried about your sister and how she's going to respond. So at the moment, you know, what I'm hearing is that your sister can be play the victim sometimes, and that you don't want to hurt her in any way. So the state that you're in at the moment, how would you describe that?
I feel a bit like my stomach's a bit kind of like in knots a little, because I know my sister, I think, pretty well, and I don't think I'll be able to give her the relation, like, it, you know, it's hard to get, you know, really come to a resolution with her, because she finds it difficult to see other people's perspective. So I think it'll be futile to have discussions with her, because she finds it very difficult to see another person's perspective, and then she loses the plot easily. So you can't have a calm conversation with her. And I worry that she wants something that I can't give her, because I think it's I've kind of decided long, you know, a while ago that, you know, she's that kind of person that you can't be vulnerable, like with from her past actions. You can't, I don't think we'll ever have the relationship like we used to have because she's not kind of the forgiving, you know, kind of type of person. So, you know, she has very high expectations and she wants blood if you do something to hurt her.
Okay. All right. So there's a couple of interesting things that you've shared with me, that it's futile and that you're worried that she wants something that you can't give her. And you made reference to it being the way that it was before. So I'm curious to know what's shifted, what's changed, because I have a sense that there was a relationship there before which is not accessible anymore.
Yeah, she's so after she separated, like, you know, like a decade ago, after she separated from her hubby, she had a little girl who's almost two. After she separated from her hubby, yeah, it was a very difficult time for her, and I was very supportive, and she came to live with us for a short time, but in the end, it didn't work out, and so she ended up moving out, and so that sort of put a strain on the relationship for a while until actually Christian was born. So a couple of years, like, we kind of really didn't talk until Christian was born, because she had asked to come and see him, and which I said yes, and then we just kind of, you know, worked from there.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of me trusting her with, you know, being vulnerable and even just being able to have a conversation, like you know, like I try and stay connected with her, and then but she pulls back, and she always thinks that my mum, you know, loves me and my older sister more than her. And like I said, you know, before she plays the victim, and then if she has issues with my older sister, but then tries to pull me into the middle of it, and it just gets a bit all tiring, really. I think
okay.
I kind of messaged her. I said, you know, at 43, I just want a bit leave of peaceful life. I don't need to have all this stress, especially if you can't resolve it with someone like her.
Okay. All right. So there's a pretty good picture here of the challenges that you've had with her and the things that you want to avoid in terms of her not being trusting, not being able to be vulnerable, playing the victim, the fact that it's tiring and you just don't want to get caught up in it all. Is it in all situations? When does it take place? Are there specific things
Is it in all situations that she plays the victim?
Yeah, well,
I think it always surfaces. I think it's kind of like it's always there, and I think there's always like some. I think, you know, she looks for the the reasons. Like, you know, there's always a trigger, I think, because she looks for the, like, you know, a reason to trigger these, like, the way she's feeling.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And so I just want to bring this back to you, Maria, because obviously we can't coach your sister through this process.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, bless her, we can send our love and hope that she'll have her process. But in terms of supporting you in this back to Australia and this limited time that you have and wanting to catch up with her and spend time with her, and for there not to be any drama, I'm trying to get a feel for where you are now. There's obviously a lot of issues that have happened in the past that you're concerned about. What it would be the ideal outcome for you? What is it that you would?
Well, I'd love to see her and you know, we just spend some, you know, nice time together. But I don't think she's, you know, ready to do that without having it out and meet and, you know, downloading everything that she's feeling.
Mm-hmm. So when you say having it out, can you clarify that for me?
So she'll tell me everything that I've done that I've done to hurt her, because I've let her down with expectations and then you know, there was nothing I'll be able to say to refute or to, you know, make her to understand, you know, another person's perspective. So it'll just, so then she'll probably just get frustrated and and it just, yeah, like she's quite fiery. She's scary. No, I don't get scared of her, but she's quite fiery.
So is that it? Is it, are you scared of her?
No, I know. I just don't need the drama. Like I said, I can't, if you can't have it like a reasonable conversation with somebody I believe that, and I think it's quite well, you know, grounded and founded, that she, you know, she finds it so hard to see, you know, things from another person's perspective, that no matter what you say, you know, she won't be accepting of it. And yeah, I just feel like we'll just come back to square one anyway, like, you know.
Yeah. So, okay.
So I had to think, do I need to see her, or do I see her, do I not see her? It'll be stressful.
Okay. Did you say something, Femke?
Yes, I did.
Yes.
So where are you at in the process right now?
Well, what I'm trying to identify is I'm trying to get clear on what it, because obviously there's a sister, but what is it that Maria is experiencing in response to all of this? And that's why I asked the question with respect to the being scared, because the fear.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I get that, I want to be able to move on towards the desired outcome of how she would like it to be.
Yeah.
I feel a little bit like there's a huge amount of information here, and there's obviously a massive dynamic between what's your sister's name, Maria?
Anna.
Between Anna and Maria, but also the whole family. And there have been a couple of times where I've wanted to clarify, but I get caught in wanting to put my own words into the conversation.
Okay.
Name, like there was a time where I would have liked to have asked Maria if there was an over responsibility pattern there of you know, trying to help and trying to I can't remember exactly what it was, but that was what came to my mind. And the other thing was the other thing's gone from my mind. Yeah. So this is sort of a little bit of the dance of trying to clarify the existing state of where Maria is at and what she's experiencing and what's at play, and then to be able to look at how we do it differently.
My guess is that she is doing the state right in front of you.
Yeah, okay.
So all those thoughts of, oh, she's not a forgiving person, she's not going to be doing this, this is what's going to happen. So there's some prophesying happening, is what I'm guessing. Like, she's not even in Australia yet, but she's already thinking about like what that conversation would be like based on experiences.
And yeah.
So it's almost like she's having this like all of the things that Maria is saying lead her to like, should I meet with her or not? Maria, would that be correct?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's interesting what you said, Tanya, about being over responsible. I think that sort of, I think that might be key too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So if I had asked you that question, would that have?
I wasn't thinking about it before, but just as you said it, speaking to Femke now, I'm thinking that, because like I think every time I have an interaction with her, like in the back, you know, because I think, like I said, she is a good person, but she just finds it hard to see things from, I think, other people's perspective. So I think overriding that is like, I don't want to be the cause of her stress. Like, I don't want her to think that I don't love her. But even if I can't have a relationship with her, I try and maintain connection because I don't want her to think that, she's not worthy of, you know, her sister's love, I guess.
Mm.
It And some things that my, you know, Rick sometimes says to me, because like she never contacts like the kids for their birthdays and things like that. And so may, you know, and he sometimes asks me, because like every time someone's, one of the kids' birthdays comes around, and she might send a message if I happen to put something on Facebook, but she rarely ever, you know, offer it back unless, you know, she's prompted by a Facebook post or something. We'll send him a message. She never calls, send any gifts or a card or anything. And so I don't know, maybe I kind of don't accept that, that that's just the way she is sometimes.
You don't accept that?
Mm.
Okay. And what's that like for you, not being able to accept that? And
I feel like my stomach's in knots again.
I just think, well, you know, I don't know. I find that hard to accept, I think. Like, so.
So one of the things.
Stop you again.
Yeah.
Tanya, do you notice that this is like, again, doing the pattern?
Yeah, I do, definitely.
So, yeah. So like, when we take a step back, because it's like, I'm kind of like, okay, so what is it? It sounds like this whole looping of it's going to be futile. Like she finds it difficult to see other people's perspective. Maria mentioned it several times. She's not a forgiving person. She doesn't like do anything on my kids' birthdays. And how does that relate to coming to Australia and meeting her so that you can ground it? But also, like, what is it that, like, with all of this, what is it that she wants to do instead?
Yeah. Does
she need to make a decision? Like, does she need to like find a way to be able to see her sister or not? Like, what does she want with that? But to kind of get her out of this loop, because otherwise it's just gonna, you're just
continue.
Gonna
yeah, be a repeat of my session last time.
Yes, a little bit.
Okay. All right, so Maria, I get a there's a lot of stuff here. Everything, I'm not going to repeat it. Everything that Femke just summarized for us. So if we just step back and take a look at that, it seems that that is a state that you go through, considering all of these options and prophesying and having a sense of being responsible and wanting to be a good sister, and at the same time finding it difficult to accept it. When you come to Australia in a couple of weeks, what is it that you would like to experience that you're not experiencing now? What is it that needs to shift?
Ideally, I can't trust that she's going to, you know, be calm, and, you know, be able to sort of, you know, talk things through. So, well, I'd love to be able to go see her and just spend some time with her.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, I just don't think that's possible.
So you'd like to see her and just spend some time with her?
Yeah.
All right. And so you just see her and spend some time with her. What's the...
And not feel anxious, I guess, that you know, like something's going to trigger her and she's just not going to... She has no self-control, so she's, you know, something will trigger her to just kind of have it out with me, which is what happened at Christmas. Like, well, not with me, but with my other sister.
Okay. So Maria, is that what this is about? Is the ability to be with your sister and to not feel anxious, regardless of what she's going through, for you to be able to manage your state so that you don't feel anxious?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, because look, at the end of the day, I can, if I wasn't anxious about how, you know, I guess if I knew that even if she did lose, you know, like even if she did lose the plot and I could always just walk away, I guess what's the worst that can happen if she did that? I feel a little bit anxious, you know, I could, I guess, have more, confidence that, you know, like, what's the worst thing that could happen if she did? Maybe I'd feel less anxious if I could kind of keep in mind that what's the worst that can happen if she did lose the plot, then I could just walk away and didn't have to, like, see her for the rest of the trip or the rest of the day or whatever we were doing.
Okay. So if you were able to have more confidence and not feel anxious and just say to yourself, what's the worst thing that could happen here, and be with her and then just walk away, regardless of what happened, whether it was good, whether it was not good, what would that mean for you if you were able to experience that?
As I say that, I think what comes up for me is that, yeah, I would still feel anxious, I think, afterwards, because I don't want her to think that I don't love her and don't care about her. So if I walked away from her, then I feel I would be like leaving her to be thinking, yeah, that so I don't care.
Can you control her thinking?
No. That's the problem. I can't. And she's so unpredictable.
So, okay.
What holds that in place? Like, Tanya, that's what I'm wondering is, like, so let's say that she's going to
Great question. That's the one I was looking for. I'm like, okay, where do I go now?
So what? So she's going to think that she doesn't love you. What does she think about that?
Yeah. So if she thinks that she doesn't love you, what do you believe to be true about that?
Well, I don't want her to think that she's unlovable. So I don't want her to think if my own sister doesn't, love me, then, you know, maybe I'm not worthy of people's love.
So for you, it's about her perception of herself as being lovable or unlovable.
I think so.
So how is it that you're taking this on as your role and your responsibility?
I guess I don't want to be the cause of her feeling that way.
And if you were the cause, what's holding that in place?
I mean, like, not that she's ever, you know, self-harmed or anything like that, but I don't know, I kind of worry about her mental state, you know, if she thinks that, you know, she's not talking to my other sister and she thinks that I don't love her or care about her. So I worry about her mental state.
Okay.
Tanya?
Yeah.
Just a little time out here. Yeah. So if we take a step back from this.
Yeah.
And you think about the things like that she has shared with you, where would you find, like, the paradox? What strikes you as paradoxical? Or
what strikes me as paradoxical is that she's worried about her sister forming views of Maria not being not loving her and not, I'm just looking at my notes to try and find the exact words.
Yeah.
Where are we? I can't find it. Yeah, what strikes me is that Maria's worried about her sister forming of you that she's not lovable, and that she's and that Maria doesn't love her. And yet what I get from what Maria's just said is that she loves her sister incredibly. She's worried about her. She's worried about her mental state. You know, she's done all these things to support her, especially after, you know, separating from her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that strikes me. That the very view that her that she's worried her sister will have of her is so contrary to the view that she does have, even though she's difficult to be with, and Maria's acknowledged that.
Right.
There's a real vulnerability and sensitivity,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, right from Maria's voice and her tone coming right down, and
So there's a lot of care.
Yeah, I'm having trouble hearing you, Femke.
Okay. So one of the things that I find paradoxical, in when I look at like how this is structured, I don't know like what specifically the sister does yet. So I'm kind of making that up, but I'm seeing someone who. Does a lot of mind reading. That's my guess. I'm seeing someone who does a lot of mind reading, draws conclusions about what Maria does, and draws conclusions about like whether, like how she is treated. And, mm-hmm. Sorry, the timer just went off. And then Maria goes into, it's futile to have discussions with her. She finds it difficult to see the other person's perspective. She's not a forgiving person on top of that, on top of like being someone who does the, what I'm hearing is that it's this person who already has a sense of like, I'm not lovable.
Mm-hmm.
Who can do that really well for herself. And then, and being in a victim mode, which is basically giving your power away and lots of blaming.
Mm.
And then Maria taking on that blame, and on that responsibility. So if you try that on, would that make you feel anxious?
Yeah. Yeah, it would make me feel anxious.
And I would like also get like a sense of powerlessness, nothing I can do about it, which also makes me anxious.
There's also a sense of like what you said before about, you know, you're imagining how she's doing it, you know, what it is that she's saying. There's also this sense of because there's so much that's happened before, there's this tension and anticipation of what it's going to be like. And so it's already tense and difficult before anything's actually been said or that's sort of being brought in, that state's been created before.
It's not even that being in Australia, it's right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Consciousness and stomach and knots. So... like you mentioned before, over responsibility. This is like the epitome of over responsibility. On responsibility for something that she doesn't have any control over in a relationship where someone is already really good at having those thoughts herself.
Yeah.
So that's where you want to do the confrontation and you know, like, and you can do that in a way where I, like, what I'm hearing is that you do have a lot of love. And maybe part of the frustrating thing is that your sister doesn't, that it's not easy to show that.
Because of what's happened in the past and because of what she's telling herself.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So Maria, as you hear that, what awarenesses come up for you?
As you say that, I have tears in my eyes. because it's, yeah, I can, like I do, I have a lot of love for her and she doesn't see it. So, you know, that's, that makes me feel sad as well.
Yeah. Mm.
But then I can't, I'm coming, you know, understanding that I am feeling over-responsible for how she feels.
Mm-hmm.
So then my question is, you know, who can you be responsible for in this situation?
Yeah, just me. And so I'm always, you know, quality checking and you know, thinking conscious, being conscious of doing, you know, making, you know, not my interactions with her of not doing and saying things that might hurt her. But inevitably, even when I do that, she finds something to be upset about.
Mm.
This and that, I think, like, is might be a great way to ground it. Because you're already imagining that, it sounds like. You're already imagining going to Australia, having a conversation with her, and her finding something to be upset about.
Mm.
Correct? Is that what triggers it?
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. If you were able, in that moment when she does that, if you were able to see that as completely hers, her thoughts are hers, her responses are hers, and they're separate from you, and you are not response able.
Yeah.
With her thoughts. If you had that, Maria, in that situation, would you still feel anxious?
No, I wouldn't feel anxious. I'm not sure what I'd need to do to convince myself that I'm not responsible for, like, to really believe that and to be okay with that. But if I did think that, then definitely, yeah, I can see I would not be anxious.
Yeah. So that is what we need to be working on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I just want to point out for everyone this. The comment that Maria just made, that, like, it's not great, of course, but it's a great indicator that you have something to work on with your client.
Mm.
And so now it's going to most likely be much easier to conjure up, okay, how do you want to be instead in a situation like that? You already said, oh, I just want to be walking away, but from what state? My guess is not from a state of anxiousness and stomach in knots.
Mm.
What state would you want to be in? Like, we already know that the value of love is important. So would that, Maria, be a part of your desired state, is to continue to feel love even if she can't welcome it in or see it?
Yeah. Yep.
So, like, if we just, I think, like, stop it here because we have 15 minutes to wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
Tanya, what was it like for you to go through this, and what are your insights in terms of, like, getting to where the change power is?
Okay, so a couple of insights. One was the ability to step back and see the state being done in front of me,
mm-hmm.
and how that is indicative of what the bigger problem that's going on, or the problem state that's present. The other one is, and maybe I just need to give myself permission, but I find myself hesitating in identifying some of these things when the client's not using the language themselves. As I say, somewhere I've got this thing about I'm not allowed to bring in other elements or other pieces of information. I'm not quite even sure what the right word is, but with respect to you know, what you said about being able to be with a sister and just experience the state of love, that was so clear in my mind, and yet I didn't feel like I had permission to be able to say, you know, if you could do that, is that something that you and also being able to acknowledge the paradox, as you call it, of the, that's being almost being created with a bit of projection and mind reading, and and I guess when the client goes into state two, I find it quite challenging to come back to, well, what is it exactly that we're dealing with? So that was a good good exercise to go through in terms of that, and being able to, you know, work with the different questions.
Yeah, and that, like, grounding it, coming back to, okay, so what is the state? We're actually, like, already in a state of anxiousness and stomach and knots. So it's projecting into the future, thinking about what is it that you see, what is it that you hear, what is it that you feel.
Mm.
So that would help to keep that really focused. There's a couple of things that I want to share. One is that when it comes to, I think, like, sometimes when in the Metta Coach training, we focus so much on the senses, and we're not, like, it's almost like a message that we're not allowed to use our intuition, because that would be mind reading.
Mm.
And I think a lot of coaches mistakenly adopt that belief of, I'm not allowed to do mind reading. So so there's a couple of thoughts that I have about that. One is that if you make it tentative and you have, like, already have quite a bit of information, and you've identified with Maria that sense of love is important for her,
mm-hmm.
then you can make it tentative. Is that something that you would want to bring into the desired state, so that you still give her a choice? Same thing with, let's say, Tanya, that you pick up really early and you just have that intuition of, I think this is about responsibility 2 and 4. And without having that, a lot of information, without asking meta questions, you don't really know if that's the case. Like, there's a couple of things that you can do with that. One, you can just ask her. And in this case, like, that worked sometimes, that, like, because she doesn't have enough awareness or information yet, it doesn't click. Doesn't mean that it's not true, but you can also just park it and say, oh, I think that might be it, but let me ask some meta questions first, to see if, like, if my my intuition is correct. So asking open meta questions can help you. So just, like, because we, in a way, we were just, like, 2 or 3 questions away from figuring that out. So that's just a couple of things that you can do with that. And then one thing also about the paradox is, if you think about, like, family systems, a lot of the time family systems are held in place, and you've got the, you know, the victim and the perpetrator and the
rescuer
and that is held in place. If someone, and it's very hard a lot of the time, if someone does the blaming and the other person does the over responsibility, it's hard for the person to do the blaming to take on responsibility. They don't have to.
Yeah.
So understanding that about the whole idea of responsibility 2 and 4, like, in a way, it's kind of funny. Like, the sister is doing all the blaming and making other people responsible in her mind, but then the other people are taking that responsibility on. How is the system going to change?
Yeah.
In that situation.
And the thing with that system is that everyone becomes a victim because not everybody's, you know, stepping into their responsibility. And that was actually the other thing that I felt compelled to share. But again, it's exactly what you said, that meta-coaching myth that you're not allowed to bring in, you know, other things because it's mind reading or it's leading or so. Yeah, it's a good piece of feedback.
Yeah, and I would say also that that's not like it's a myth. It's not actually the case. It's how we train it in the beginning, because we don't want people to jump to mind reading right away, because that's we want to get to a point of like where you actually do it, are able to intuit because you're informed enough.
Mm.
And so that's a fine line, of course. Mm. But my thinking is if you have that hunch and if you have that intuition, test it. If your client says no, then no, there's nothing lost, really.
Mm.
So, Maria, do you have any insights or questions or things that you want to share?
Well, firstly, I wanted to thank you, Tanya, so much for your care and coaching today. Really appreciate it. But one thing you just said too, Femke, about the system, you know, and you too, Tanya, not changing, I guess, unless something changes. So that's kind of, made me think about how I want to be going forward, I guess, you know, because it's not going to be helpful if, my sister, you know, plays a victim and then I also feel over responsible for her as well. And if she's blaming and I'm taking that blame on,
mm-hmm.
nothing will change. So that's, insightful. Thank you.
Yeah. And that can be really tough to let go of.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, and maybe that's something that, like if Tanya is willing, that maybe you can do a buddy coaching or something.
Mm, absolutely. I was going to suggest the same. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, because I think that would be very liberating and maybe even liberating for your sister as well.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
And I think I've got a couple of books on that because I've struggled with that.
Oh, really?
I'll take a look at my notes and see if I can share something with you.
Oh, that would be great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a really great video on the Cartman Triangle, which is very cute and describes each of the roles of the characters in the triangle and the way that everyone gets caught up in, you know, doing other people's thinking for them, and ultimately everyone becomes the victim because of the game playing and the enmeshment with each other that's in play.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, and that I think is also like those kinds of things are valuable to know, you know. So if you have like a, in the niche that you're in, if that's something that comes up a lot, to have that information as a resource and so that you can share that, because it's when people read up on it, it gives them also a better idea of how they want to be and what to work on.
Mm.
So what is that? Sorry, Tanya. How do you spell it?
Cartman. I'll send you a link, but it's K-A-R. Okay. K-A-R-P-M-A-N, Cartman.
Okay, excellent.
It comes from the work that was done in the, I think it was the 60s, I'm Okay, You're Okay. It's all transactional.
Oh, okay. Yep.
TA-based, transactional analysis, the parent, adult, child. Yeah. It's some of the original work's really hard. I found it very hard to read. It's quite dry. But some of the more recent stuff is a little bit more
yeah, it's a bit easier to comprehend the dynamic.
I'll have a look. Thank you.
Mm. I use it a lot in my stuff. It's really helpful.
Yeah. Mm. I'll definitely have a look. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So any questions about the process and structure of finding the, like, where the core is and the change power? I've seen Francisco drop in and out. I think maybe not, the connection wasn't so good. So okay, sounds good, Francisco. He mentioned that he had some internet interferences and we will look at the recorded session. So yeah, if you then have any questions, just drop me an email, or better yet, post it in the Facebook group, because that, like, and everyone can learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that we need to discuss before we jump off the call, Maria or Tanya?
No, that's all good.
I would be interested just to know where this, you know, had we had a full hour or so, where we could have gone with that. But I guess that's a question that, you know, no one knows the absolute answer to. But I would value your thoughts on Femke, on where you would have taken it in terms of, you know, if we had more time, what you would have. We talked about some of the things we would have explored in terms of the patterns that we recognized, but
there's a couple of things. Like, one, I would have really grounded it. Like, what is it that you imagine your sister doing that has your you anxious in your stomach and not? Because then we have a test at the end.
Sorry, say that a bit again. Something the end.
Okay, then we would have a test.
Okay.
Use at the end. So if you now think of your sister doing this behavior, are you now able to feel differently? To feel love and freedom and separate from what she's saying.
Mm-hmm.
So, so that's one thing. I would ground it really mm-hmm. well with getting those details. And where does she have that mapped out in her mind? Like, you know, is it like a big screen? Is she imagining her sister right next to her? Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like the details of that. And then I would work with, I don't want her to think she is unlovable. And mm-hmm. because that is like over responsibility. So we've identified that sense of over responsibility. We've also identified that Maria doesn't know how to not feel responsible.
Mm.
So, I want to know now how she does over responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably get more details around that, how she does that. Is it with just thoughts? Is it like a embodied feeling? Something that she learned in her past? Does she not, like, if what are some of the things that like hold that over responsibility in place? Like, if she lets it go, then what? So I want to, that's like when I start to kind of figure out, okay, how would we help her get to like a healthy responsibility? Does she know what that feels like? Does she have that in certain areas of her life with certain people that she's also close with? Or is that a pattern that runs across other people as well? So I want to get all of that information so that we can figure out like what holds this in place and what can we do to change it, so mm-hmm. that then we can set an outcome,
mm-hmm.
get a big enough motivation and a decision on that outcome. And then we can do the change work.
Okay.
Did that help?
Yeah, that's really helpful. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Okay, so let's see if I've got other. Okay. All right, so then we'll leave it for today with this. I'm going to post it on the Facebook or on the website so that you can listen back to it.
Wonderful.
And then feel free to ask any questions on the Facebook group in the meantime. Otherwise, we meet again 2 weeks from now. And let me see if I can quickly find what we're... I lost that. All right, I'll send you an update with what we're going to work on next week.
On the Fiendam, I've got confronting and challenging.
Oh, March yeah.
I pressed the wrong link yesterday, so I watched that one, yesterday and then went, oh, no, I've rolled the wrong one. So, yeah, I'm ready to go.
Oh, good.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Maria. I'll drop you a message on Facebook.
Lovely. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. Bye. Thank you.